listening to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 AM K108.
I am happy. I have a dream.
I got a dream.
One day.
We're gonna work it out.
One day.
We're gonna work it out.
One day.
We're gonna work it out.
I have a dream.
I got a dream.
Struggle is my address with pain and crack list. Gunshots coming from sounds of blackness. Given this game with no time to practice. Born on a blacklist. Told I'm below average. A life with no cabbage. That's no money if you're from where I'm from. Funny, I just want some of your sons. Dark clouds seem to follow me. Alcohol that my pop swallowed bottle me. No apology, I walk with a bulge on my shoulder. It's the Cold War, I'm a colder soldier. Hold the same fight that made Martin Luther the king. I ain't using it for the right thing. In between lean and the fiends, hustle and the schemes. I put together pieces of a dream. I still have one.
I got a dream.
One day.
We gonna work it out.
In the mirror, images of me getting much clearer, dear self. I wrote a letter just to better my soul. If I don't express it, then forever I hold inside. I'm from a side where we out of control. Rap music and the hood play the fatherly role. My story like yours, yo, gotta be told. Trying to make it from a gangster to a godly role. Red scrolls of stone slaves and Jewish people in cold caves. Hate has no color or age, flip the page. Now my rage became freedom, right? Dreams in the dark, they far, but I can see them. I believe in heaven more than hell. Left is more than jail. In the ghetto, let love prevail. With a story to tell, my eyes see the glory. And well, the world waits for me to yell. I have a dream.
I got a dream.
One day.
We gonna work it out.
One day.
We gonna work it out.
One day.
We gonna work it out.
I have a dream.
I got a dream.
One day.
We gonna work it out.
One day.
We gonna work it out.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. We are sitting here with some friends of the community, and I want to thank all of you for joining me, first of all. And again, it's the new year, and it's also Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday. It's time to celebrate that if you're into that, which I am, obviously. And we have others. I thought we'd bring some community members and for different organizations that are working to make things better for all people, not just black, not just white, not just gay, but as a community, all of us. And we all have something in common, even though we tend to say Martin Luther King struggled and died for black people. But I think if you look back at the entire process and what has transpired, all people participated in helping him get to where he was and contributed, and so therefore some say there is no such thing as a struggle, but we must go on. So having said all that, I have Mr. Scott Foster, who's a community organizer on many issues, environment and a number of issues, and I'll let him describe that. And I have Miss Marsha Joyner. She's president emeritus of the Martin Luther King Coalition. Many of you know her, and she's been on the show before and was just early on POCA's Potpourri. And I have Miss Carolyn Martinez with PFLAG, a parent, family, and friends of lesbian and gays.
Right on.
And so...
Well, can I...
So
just to make sure that we start... Okay.
All right. So... Marshall's want to say, but anyway, we're just going to have an open conversation. So if you guys, as you talk on occasion, introduce yourself again, because the listeners out there can't tell your voice, even I know your faces. So anything goes today, because I want to let the public know that while government doesn't fund many programs and all, there are people out there giving their all, giving it the time, they're free, they're volunteering, they're all kinds of things that they're giving. And if you are interested in any of this, please feel free to call, and they're going to give contact numbers. But I encourage you, in the spirit of giving and participating and making a better community, contact these people or others that are in groups such as these. But anyway, the three of you, thank you for joining, and introduce yourselves if you would.
I'm Marsha, and I want to challenge you on your opening music. I have a dream. If you read Friday's paper and you saw the poll on how many people did not celebrate the holiday, did not know what the holiday was about, and I am sure that of the 50 words in that speech that he gave on in August 1963, we know I have a dream. Four words. You perpetuated that with the song. People do not know the story. They don't know the history. It's a new generation, and all they know is I have a dream, and why the hell are we celebrating a dreamer?
Well,
when Martin Luther King was more than a dream, if you were there, if you heard, if you were present that day, okay, if you were present that day, what
now,
we heard as black people was that they came for jobs and freedom, and that America, the black people, had been given a check that came back marked insufficient funds. The white media heard, I have a dream. And in that instant, our warrior was changed from a warrior to a dreamer. And if you'll notice, the last 4 years of his life were a wash. They didn't cover him. Then all of a sudden he goes from I have a dream to a dead man.
Okay. Well, I don't know if it was appropriate or is appropriate for you to challenge me, because I had not a darn thing to do with writing that song.
I know.
And if I can get four words in, that's four words they didn't know, and that's four words they may be compelled to ask further. Who was this guy that had a dream? So don't be so extreme on one end. Because, again, you put a little music there, and you might attract a few guys who would never care. So they might be bothered to go and a little bebop and a little, you know. It's the same product of gospel.
It is.
Yeah, people read the Bible, but then they put a little spiritual foot stomping and hand clapping, and then it catches folks like you and me who go, oh, I like that. Half the time, we don't know that he gave his only son and all of that. We don't know about the lion's den, but we do know it's a spiritual, it's motivating. So the intent is, and that's why I brought you in.
I know.
See, this is your chance to get those that don't know to know. So have at it.
I whenever it's possible, but it ain't necessarily.
So, that was Scott.
Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, go ahead.
Well, I was thinking of what happened on Friday at the Capitol. I am a volunteer, and I'm also doing tours for the Capitol until we get, we're in the transitional
mode.
And I used the opportunity when talking to a group of HPU students to remind them about Martin Luther King and to make sure, because I had read that article about people not knowing and not doing anything connected to Martin Luther King, to come down and at least join in the parade. And if they didn't want to join in, that they could sit and watch it to see how many groups were there. And so I think that's our job, those of us who came after him, is to keep the dream alive. To hold on to it and keep repeating all of his words, that if one person is living in injustice, all of living in injustice. And I think here in Hawaii, that's really, there are so many different segments and fragments and whatever, that we have to keep repeating those words over and over, make it become our mantra, that if one person is discriminated against, all people are discriminated against. Of course, the world doesn't see it quite like that. That's why we get
that's why we have
job.
To do, yes.
Yes. Unpaid, but an endless job.
Yes.
You, Scott, anything on that?
Well, I guess the thought that was running through my mind was talking about, Carolyn mentioned HPU students, which suggests a younger generation. I'm 70. I've come to understand that history is a fluid, ongoing thing that those of us have lived through sometimes have a difficult time conveying the sentiments that we have because we were there to the younger generations. It becomes words, black and white flickering pictures on a TV screen. Marcia's passed me a quote here by James Baldwin, the great writer, black writer. History does not refer merely or even principally to the past. On the contrary, the great force of history comes from the fact that we carry it within us, are unconsciously controlled by it in many ways, and history is literally present in all that we do. Which, thank you, James Baldwin, makes my point. Thank you, Marcia.
I think you know, I write this book for every year for the Martin Luther King holiday, and this is our 11th year of writing. And we talked this time about the unsung heroes of the movement, and that is because, you know, usually we start with the usual stuff, and this year, because of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and the fact that we, the old Congress, I don't have any faith in the new Congress, but in the old Congress, finally did something. So I thought it was appropriate to write about the gays in the civil rights movement and the fact that they were so much a part of the whole. And, you know, we pretend like, oh, they were in the shadows or they didn't exist or whatever. You know that. We talk about that, and I want to read what Mrs. King said. Justice is indivisible. And this is Mrs. King. Far too long, our nation has tolerated the insidious form of discrimination against this group of Americans, who have worked as hard as any other group, paid their taxes like anyone else, and yet have been denied equal protection under the law. I believe that freedom and justice cannot be parceled out in pieces to suit political convenience. My husband, Martin Luther King Jr., said, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere."
Mm-hmm. So, if you would, in the vein as you had mentioned in the opening statements, and I'm always up to a challenge.
Okay.
And that was Will I Am.
Yes, I understand.
The Black Eyed Peas, right. and Common Music video, and A Dream. This is, you can find this now at mlkonline.net, and it has a wealth of information on Martin Luther King. And if I might, just for the sake of, I wanted to introduce this as part of the show here. Hold on.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists. Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor. The promises of the Great Society.
So always hold your horse in my stall. I don't just feed them oats. I give them milk and honey, too. So.
White and Negro bear the
just remember that. When you're dealing with me, I thought it out. I look empty. But, darling, my brain is...
And it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes, yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
Okay.
Do we have the will?
Well, tell us.
Well,
what's your opinion on that?
Let's start with hunger.
Okay.
Because that's at the base, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, hunger is a political thing. That the universe, the earth, produces enough food for all of us. So, why are people hungry? It's a political thing. Because, as you know, when people are hungry, that's all they think about. You know, with a baby, when it's hungry, there's nothing else you can give it but food. Because it'll carry on until it gets fed. So, if you don't feed people, then that's all they think about is food. They do whatever they have to do. They dig in the soil to pick up the potatoes, right? Now, when you feed people, what happens Then what does the child do when it's satisfied? The first thing he says is why. Right? Right. You had children. What's the first thing they say? Why? Okay. Mm-hmm. Now you've got people saying why. And they want to read. They send me to the second grade, isn't it? So now I'm fat. I get asked why, and they taught me to read in second grade. Now we got a problem. Now, and that's what happens. Once you feed people, they start asking why. They learn to read and write. Now they start talking back. So the powers that be, if they're going to stay in power, they don't want you talking back. Because now you got people like me, the three of us, that are a problem to the establishment. Because we ask why and we talk back. And we are fed. So if you want to stay in power, you don't want this to happen, what do? You keep them hungry.
Well, hunger has so many different levels. Hunger of the soul, hunger of the spirit, and I think that's probably what we miss the most. We here in Hawaii, we talk about aloha, but do we live it? Do we care about our brothers and sisters? Not a couple of years ago when aloha went down the tubes, and we had all the people out of work losing their homes. It wasn't in our neighborhood. We have a neighborhood watch, so we were gathering one night, and all of a sudden, one person started in on, well, you know, we better watch because all these homeless around, they're going to start basically messing up our nice little neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could all, once that person said it, then it caught like wildfire, and they started, and I thought, wait a second, we're a neighborhood watch. This is not our, you know. Finally, I asked them, do you have any brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, aunties, tutus that work for Aloha? Are any of them, do you know friends who've lost their jobs? They are some of our homeless now.
Mm-hmm.
I think, what about, remember the old saying, he's not heavy, he's my brother. But we have sort of lost that in today's world. It's easier to look the other way. Get them out of the parks. We don't want them in the parks. We don't want them on the beaches.
Mm-hmm.
But what do we do? What do we do? I volunteer.
When we speak of the power to be, who are we speaking about specifically in your minds, or share with the listeners? Who is they?
Well, locally,
mm-hmm.
the elected officials, the corporate heads,
mm-hmm.
the people that write the big checks, and the unions.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's I got.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, to that I would add, especially in Hawaii, I have sort of a blanket label, the minions of power, the people that have good jobs. They're guaranteed good jobs because of their political and social connections. The people that are not qualified for the jobs they're in,
mm-hmm.
producing the great mediocrity, I think everyone understands in Hawaii, whether it's mediocrity in education, whether it's mediocrity in beach cleanup, whether it's mediocrity in garbage disposal, and referring to Carol's story yesterday about the hospital waste, the medical waste that have washed down near Ko'olina. So let's include all those folks. And they drive by in their air-conditioned cars, and they see all of this stuff, and they go back to their condos and their nice homes, many of them in gated communities. And in the condos, they rise above it all in their co-aligned elevators. What's the worry for them?
Mm-hmm. Here's something that I'm curious about. We so often say they and the power. As I walk into the state legislative process and go down to the state capitol, they that I see is actually people whose parents were just one generation out of the plantation. So I'm always a little reluctant to say they, because they mean it's possible that we are inflicting our own injuries because we get into office and then we or become they.
Yes.
And they become not sensitive to us or issues. So I see a lot of them down there at the state capitol that were just 10 years ago didn't have civil rights or what have you, or still were being discriminated against, or 20 years ago their affirmative action had to take place. So I'm always careful and cautious not to say they in the corporation, because maybe the corporation is training them to inflict injury on us. So if that makes sense.
It sounds
like I'm on drugs.
But no, it does. It makes perfect sense. Several years ago, the three of us are all members of the Democratic Party, and several years ago, one Democrat, I will not name him, and he was lamenting the fact that we as a generation had raised a generation of Republicans, that they knew nothing of the plantation struggles, they knew nothing of all of the things that went in to throwing off the yoke of oppression in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
They think it's always been like this. They think there's always been a weekend. They never knew what it was like before you had child labor laws, before you had regulations of a 40-hour week. They never knew this. And so he was telling me, and it was quite an eye-opener, that we raised a generation of Republicans. They don't know the story. And it's the same thing I was saying about Martin Luther King. We don't know the story of Martin Luther King. We don't know the story of the time when the Big Five controlled everything. Mm-hmm. It was a way of life in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. You know, all of these people that could not, were not, even though they were born here, were not considered citizens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Couldn't vote.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the story is the same, no matter what color we are, that we don't know struggles. We don't know how far we've come.
We actually know, and some of us become selfish, and then that selfishness perpetuates itself, manifests itself into some get inside government and some get power, and they turn their backs because they now become... take, for example, the Waianae Coast. There's no way you could have that kind of climate, the roads, the drugs, and all of those things, and then blame it on the Republicans or blame it on the people, the corporations. They get to select people that they go, hey, brah, how are you? Aloha. It's when they get in office, what do they do for them? And so that is, I don't know if it was it foreseeable, or could it be predicted? Did Martin Luther King and others predict this? Did he think or allow for getting in and building them up and getting voting and then voting them in, and they turn and become not turncoats, but just selfish?
They become the power.
One of the greatest, I think, examples of that is what happened last year in the midst of everyone losing their jobs. And our Senate and House voted themselves a 36% raise.
And these are Democrats.
And yes, Democrats.
Yes,
so, Democrats. And we took a couple of them, Representative Haar and Senator Gabbard,
mm-hmm.
to task for it at a neighborhood board. And mm-hmm. you would not expect the fur that flew. We haven't had a raise in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Does it make any difference if you haven't had a raise in 5 years when your brother and sister are sitting there with no home? Their house that they worked for their whole lives has been taken away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And we could not bridge the gap.
Well,
and people were really upset at that meeting, and they tried to talk, and it didn't make any difference.
Carolyn, maybe not a correction, but adding to what you said about them voting themselves the raise, it's even worse than that. They've got it set up now so that there's a separate commission that decides how much their raises will be. Now, they may have to vote to approve the final number, but I find that interesting that they have distanced themselves from the process that allows them to have those raises.
Well, that's at the federal level, the state level, and the municipal level. There is this commission that does that. So, yes, they have. But getting back to what happens between this idealistic young person out on the street corner saying, I'm going to do this, this, and this. And then they discover how much it costs to run for office. And they take money from here and money from there and money from there. And pretty soon they have, you know, they owe their soul to the company store. And that's where this whole thing gets really murky. We worked for years on trying to take the money out of the campaign and have it paid for by the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
So that wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that was shut down. Because once you begin to take money, and you know that, once you take money from this person and that person and that person, then the minute you're elected, they come and sit in on your office, and we don't like this, and we don't like that, and we don't want this. And even our great Obama, whom I loved and worked for, you notice how he has sold his soul to the NRA. And I know people don't want to hear me say that about him, but he has.
And what proof do you have of that? Now, I'm going to talking about challenge. That is when you make a broad statement like that. Now, do we throw the baby out with the bathwater?
No,
because
no, I'm not moving.
Okay.
I'm not moving from him.
Okay. Do we evict him?
No, we have to challenge him on that.
Okay.
If they have, the NRA has that much power, and when you look at the numbers of people that voted for him,
mm-hmm.
then we ought to have as much power as the NRA.
We still do.
We need to come together and force it. We need to show our hand. We need to... It's not enough to say, I voted for you, now here, go do your job.
Mm.
We need to stay on him, as well as on all of our young legislators here, our new city council people. We need to stay on them.
May I dispel some myths about the NRA? I'm from the Midwest. I'm from Oklahoma.
Poor thing.
Well, far
away from them.
Well, some of my friends say I moved to Hawaii, which is far away from Oklahoma. You can get still be in the country, but that's not quite true. I was back there in October, and it's still a wonderful place. The people, quite frankly, we have what we practice in Oklahoma is called Southern hospitality, which in many ways is like Aloha. It's not as spiritually based, perhaps, as Aloha, but they still practice Southern hospitality back there, unlike here where Aloha has just become a slogan on a hotel advertisement. But my point is, back to the NRA, there have been several books written about why so many of the mid-American states have become red states. And the NRA has a lot to do with that. And one of the reasons the Democrats have failed to understand that in that part of the country, farmers, ranchers, thousands of acres without a town, miles and miles and miles till you get to the next town, you've got farmers protecting their livestock because of wolves, because of mountain lions. I frankly know very few people back there who are, at least in the rural communities, that don't have a rifle mounted in the back of their pickup truck. And it's not there to go after humans. It's there to defend their livestock.
Well,
and so when Democrats attack the NRA, they don't understand millions of people who have a completely different take on guns. Now, we can argue about what kind of weapons ought to be easily available and all of that stuff, but all those farmers and ranchers and small town people here is the Democrats want to take my guns away. And until we at least address that issue, the Democrats are going to keep losing those states.
I'd like to go back to President Obama for a moment. And I think that the entire nation of Democrats have done the president a really kick in the knee, so to speak, in that where were all the Democrats when he was pushing for health care? Where were the Democrats? They decided to run and vote for different things and didn't. Now we have a health care program that doesn't really wash. We are the laughing stock of Canada and many countries in Europe because we have been so miserly in how we are processing one of his campaign's promises. And we lay it at his feet. When in reality, where were all those elected officials in D.C. other than, Inouye and Akaka and our team that voted for a better form of health care reform? And, you know...
Well, Carolyn, I watched that. I watched the whole thing very closely, of course, and because I have had... periods lately until I got my Medicare that I didn't have health care. I lost my health care several years ago when the economy melted down, and I became one of the have-nots. And the debate on health care boiled down to one thing. The haves, which was 60% of the people in the country, have some kind of health care. Versus the 40% that had not. That was a slam dunk. We didn't, the Democrats failed to even address that debate.
I think you're absolutely correct. There was no coming together. There was no...
There was no unity?
No unity on these issues at all. The public option, which is what most of us wanted, disappeared immediately, right out the chute. We're not going there. There was not the push. There were not the Democrats as a whole, as a lobby. Those of us that do have health care looked the other way, as Scott was saying. We didn't support him, no. No, we didn't. And every time the other side says that the health care was job-killing, we didn't fight back. Every time the Republicans said something that wasn't true, we didn't have a Democrat that stood up and said, you're not telling the truth. There was no pushback. And the Tea Party got away with telling all kinds of mistruths and whatnot. There was no pushback.
Let's bring this health care thing back to Hawaii. Democrats in Hawaii will have another chance this year to pass single-payer health in Hawaii. And I think everyone knows that for many years, Hawaii's prepaid health plan was the envy of the nation. And the insurance companies and all the folks that profit now off of our corporatized health system, and that's what it is. The hospitals are corporations, the doctors are corporations, the emergency rooms are corporations. Single payers being introduced back in Hawaii now. I mean, there's a bill going in for single payer. Neil Abercrombie has said he supports single payer. We've got this budget deficit. A huge part of the budget deficit is what? Unfunded health plans for the state workers. So if Democrats want to get their act together on health care in Hawaii this year, then let's get behind single payer in Hawaii. We can do that just as we did with prepaid health in, 40 years ago, whatever it was. So I'm going to repeat that. Democrats have a chance to pass single payer health this year in Hawaii, and the governor supports that.
And that's one of the things. I have a few other hats, and one of them is I'm district chair for District 40 out in Kapolei, Makakilo, Honokai, Hale, you name it, sort of out in that big mass of growing humanity. And I addressed the State Central Committee, and I urged them not to leave Neil, Governor Abercrombie, alone, out there on a limb by himself. That we can't do to our governor what our nation did to President Obama. That we have to support him, that we have to write testimony, that we have to call in, that we have to use all the means at our hands to make sure that we don't let, you know, the deja vu again, because this is just criminal. It really is to all those people who need health care. And our son is one of them. He lost his job during the downfall, and so for almost 2 years now, he hasn't had health care. Do you know how difficult that is? You know,
And that's a big cost of when you don't have health care. What so is you don't go to the doctor for preventive care. You don't get taken care of when it's a minor issue. So then when it becomes a big deal, an emergency, they go to the emergency room, which costs far more than if they had been seen on a regular basis. And they go to Queens. Queens takes federal grants, which means they cannot deny anyone care. And so it's $1,000 in the ambulance to Queens. That's number one. And then all of those things that Queens does, and who gets the bill? We do. It comes back to the taxpayers. That is a huge, huge bill that we must pay the taxpayers of Hawaii.
That we are currently paying.
It's even more complicated than that, because when someone without health care goes to a hospital, believe me, they are billed, and if they can't pay it, they are sued. Mm-hmm. And it's only then that the state winds up paying for it. In the meantime, that poor struggling soul's credit is ruined, and then the whole thing snowballs.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's just criminal. A very basic human right, a very basic, is not taken care of.
So, if I can, if you would join in and help me try and explain this or shine some light. Let's take a fledgling politician. The people want him. He makes promises. She makes promises. She gets in office. What then happens? Does the party then bring her or he or her into the office and then tell them this is the party line? Yeah. When does that happen? But apparently, you don't get any independence. So this is back. I'm digressing to speak to the us, they, and we, and them.
Okay.
So I want you to just be frank.
No,
don't
I would,
be partisan. I want you to be frank. Hold on.
Okay.
We got another hour. So
No. I don't want to defend the party. I'm not going to do that.
Just let me finish this. I wish to explain to the community out there that you can have a person that is committed and can take money. Just because you take money from an entity doesn't mean you've sold your soul. There are other things. I mean, if that's the case, if you're a nonprofit organization, will you not accept from Coca-Cola, their entities? Would you accept from the hotels? Do you accept from Foodland? I mean, where do you draw this line? But what I want to speak to, if you could, if you have any knowledge of this, walk the community of the listeners out there. So what happens when a fledgling politician, whether Republican, Democrat, Independent, when he goes in, is there anybody that comes and say, we need to have a talk?
Okay. Let me talk about what's been happening recently. I've run for office under both parties.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just recently that the Democratic Party has started standing up for its own platform. Mm-hmm. In the past, you have to go before that fledgling gets into office. When it all starts, when they pull papers and they go down and say, I want to be da 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 da.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go in.
Well, no, not da 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 da. I want to run as a Democrat.
No, let's back up. If the law demands that you sign as a Democrat, Republican, da-da. Now, if that were changed so that you don't have to run on the parties D or R, now, if that was taken out of the equation, if you go to pull papers and you say, I want to run for the House from my district, and you fill out the paper, if you don't put a D or an R, they don't accept the papers.
Well, no, I want to speak not to the theory. I want to speak to the
action. No, I'm saying that's the beginning.
I know, but that's if the law didn't. So what you're saying is the law exists. So I'm trying to walk the public through.
Right.
When we say that Obama sold his soul, I'm not defending Obama, but let's be frank and let's be true. What happens when a fledgling walks through that door and put his name in the hat or her name in the hat? And this will speak to why people are disenfranchised.
And this year, we had a really interesting incident. There were people who said, I'm a Democrat and I want to run for X number of this office. And they hadn't registered with the Democratic Party. And so that caused a whole another ball game to go on place, because some of us said, why are people running when they, number one, they're not registered. Number two, they don't stand up for the party. Do they even know that the party has a platform? And how strongly do we Democrats take it seriously that we have a platform? If we Democrats, and I now consider myself 100%, I've gone back to the party of my father and mother. And if we really believed in our platform, we wouldn't have to be fighting now for equal civil rights. We wouldn't be having to fight for health care. We'd already have it. So it caused a little commotion within the party, and we had to go back, and they did call these few people in, and they did sit down and say, you have to read the platform, and you have to sign it. And if you don't agree with any portion of it, you have to let us know. And see, and this is not a litmus test, because there's no, they don't have to pass 70% or whatever, but they did, you know. But it's really amazing, and it's great. I really feel that we have a stronger Democratic Party now that we are looking, because how many are dinos? And some people don't know what a dino is, a Democrat in name only.
Mm-hmm.
And we are now starting, and I know it's not perfect, and I know it's not as strong as everyone wants, but at least we're calling some officials to accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And I have it on very good, hearsay, down on the word on the street, is that they're being told, you step out of line too many times, you vote too many times against the party, and you will be called in.
We see then the potholes and the hungry children and lack of jobs and no insurance and no medical, is it they? Is it the corporation or is it us?
It's us. Now, you know, they choose, the candidate chooses which party they want to belong to based on the philosophy of the party. However, in the last 40 years, it's been based on, oh, if I run as a Democrat, I can get elected.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't based on a philosophy. It was based on, I can get elected. We had so many Democrats, the Donos, who, in name only. So, no, they didn't vote like we would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
We also, as a party, didn't show up to lobby for our event. Last year, I sat through 30 hours at the city council of a budget hearing. And, you know, maybe there were two people there. The public wasn't there to lobby for what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
The public didn't show up. So we allow, by not being there, by not taking a stand, by not filling up, we allow this to happen.
Okay, we're going to take a break here. This is the Carol Cox Show. I have Scott Foster, Marsha Joyner, and Carolyn Martinez, Martinez Galoyan.
Thank you.
And I failed to, and I saw that her husband sat there and go, her name is Gloria.
For a long time.
For a long time. And he said, I've lost my hair here. But anyway, carolcox.com and 524-1080. Some of you call in and we patch you in and it disconnects. So if you're interested in having comment, please feel free to call again. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. And hold your horses.
But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now.
It's taken him so long.
I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land.
The song. That's what my God tells me. And I say it's taken him so long, 'cause we've got so far to come. But in my heart, I can
this is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Once in every life, someone comes along. And you came to me. It was almost like a song. You were in my arms, just where you belong. We were so in love. It was almost like a song. January through December, it was such a perfect year. Dying ember. like a song, but it's much too sad to write. It was almost like a song, but much too sad to
Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. That was Mr. Johnny Hartman. And I tell you, that's the way it should go. Nice and smooth. Anyway, I'm here with Marsha Joyner, Mr. Scott Foster, Miss Carolyn Goloyu, or Martinez Goloyu, and we're here talking about various issues. And if you want to join in, again, when you call in, I'm patching you through and you're hanging up or it's disconnecting, but either way, we'll connect sooner or later. Anyway, go ahead, folks. And
well, tomorrow is the official holiday, the Martin Luther King holiday. It's the 25th anniversary of the holiday and the 23rd in Hawaii. So I would like to invite everybody to come and participate in the parade. It begins at Magic Island, and you need to register, and that process begins at 7 a.m., and the parade starts at 9 a.m., and it goes from Magic Island to Kapi'olani Park, at which there will be a unity rally. And we do invite everybody to come. Everybody can participate. Just because it is a Martin Luther King holiday, it is not a, quote, black thing. In fact, if you look over the years, 15% of the marchers have been black. Everything else is everybody else. So you're welcome, no matter who you are. The only requirement is that there's no hate language. So we'd like to see you there tomorrow morning.
And where, again, does it
start? It begins at Magic Island.
Okay.
And ends at Kapi'olani Park.
Okay.
At 9 a.m. sharp.
All righty. I got a caller. They called in earlier.
And, okay.
If you're real quick, caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead with just comment or question.
I'd like to apologize for maybe forgetting the names. I think it's Marsha Joyner.
Okay.
And Scott, and I've forgotten the other lady's name.
Carol.
My question is that I've listened to you for the last hour. I'm a black person living in Hawaii. I've been here since 1982, approximately 28 years. And I've listened to you talk about politicizing this whole thing, the Martin Luther King Day. You talked about the NRA, Obama selling their soul out, health care, Danny LaCocca. And what I don't understand is, if you could just answer this question for me, why is it that Afro-Americans seem to be the only ethnic group that has an increase in population here? When I came here, I think we were like 3%. We still are. Every other ethnic group has, doubled. Triple their population. A good example would be the Filipino population, and they've worked hard to do that. They were 11% when I came here, they're now 22%. I get tired of seeing black people only hired when the government, U.S. government steps in and says, hey, you folks aren't doing your job and you're hiring quota. And when they do, they don't hire blacks across the board. They hire them as security guards. You can see a million security guards on this island, but you don't see any, you see very few black people working in city hall, state government. You don't see them in middle management jobs. Would you please answer that for me? What seems to be happening here, and how is it being addressed? And what do you think Martin Luther King would say about the conditions here in Hawaii for the host culture, the Hawaiians and blacks here? If you explain that to me, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay. First, let me say thank you for calling. And you said that our population is now 3%. We were at a minus 3%, so that means we've gained. Part of the census in counting us is that if you are military connected, you are not counted. So it depends on who's counting. if you count the military connected, we're at 50 plus thousand. If you take out that equation, it's down to 30 some thousand. That's number one. And number two, in terms of whether we increase our numbers or not, and I really don't know that. I hate to say, I can't tell you about the numbers. And you're right. If you go to Honolulu Holly, there are very few of us. I don't know. However, there are 9,000 employees in the city, and not all of them are in that one place. So I don't know, you know, they're all over the city. And the same with the state. So I don't know what the numbers are. But you're right. That's one thing about not having elected officials. In most cities, you have people that live in enclaves. In Hawaii, we don't live in an enclave, so you don't have an African-American enclave like you have a Filipino enclave in Waipahu. So you know that you're going to get an elected official who is Filipino from Waipahu. Because we live all over the island, we've only elected two African-Americans, one to city council and two to the legislature. So that's part of that issue, is that we are so diverse, number one, and number two, we look local. You can't tell who's who. So that's another issue. And then for those of us that have been here through generations and have intermarried with all of these other cultures, you know, you can't tell who's who. So I don't want to justify this. I'm just trying to say that this is part of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Scott, Carolyn?
I want to maybe move back to the question that you asked before the break about...
The caller had a question. He wanted to have any comment?
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay, Carolyn?
I have no idea.
Unfortunately, we are former military. My husband's retired Air Force. And so I have only been here since 81. And so I haven't noticed a big increase or a big decrease. It's just, like Marcia says, so many people look local.
Well,
you know, except for me.
I don't. I chime in there and say, factually, there is a large amount of racial discrimination in this state. There is a lot of hatred in this state. If you're gay, you can't find a place to live. If you have AIDS or if you're sickened, you can't find places to live. And all of those things. If you go to Waianae, and areas where Hawaiians live, or people of color, whoever that is, it can be also people that are a Caucasian background, they're suffering. So you have discrimination, and I don't think that we all look alike, not taking issue with it, because even if we did look alike, it is still the burden of the government to be fair. And here's one example. If you try to enter into the city employment or the state employment, you have to be in the system first.
That's right.
You understand. So that by design. And then secondly, there are a lot of people that the jobs that are, they work, they retire, and they re-enter through the back door in another job or as a contractor. And this is done by favor and by friend. And there is discrimination here against whites, blacks, and we're just a bunch of sick people when it really the truth is to be told. So looking alike and assimilating and marrying into, still yet there are some that haven't, and they are feeling the brunt of this. And so, you know, I was out at Lanai Lookout, and someone's tourist said, my friends told me before I got here, that just avoid any area that starts with W.
as a gay Howley,
right,
from Oklahoma, I would suggest just imagine the challenges that a black lesbian has in Hawaii, or imagine the challenges that a black physically disabled lesbian would have in Hawaii. and the pecking order goes that way.
Mm-hmm. So we I think half the time we say, oh, we're a melting pot. And when you have people, I know people that tell me, well, I wouldn't allow my son to marry that girl because she was Chinese. Why? Well, we're Japanese. You know, I've had that said to me. So I think what we have to do as a community is to be honest with ourselves and recognize that when people can have two jobs, and they're very good government jobs, how are you going to invite, and how are you going to, and let's speak to the government role and singling out or weeding out the people that are in the military. They have to register their cars, they pay the taxes but yet they can't vote here, or, you know, unless
they can't vote if they change.
If, see, it's conditional.
Uh-huh.
See, so that's the thing. So,
and if you're a military wife, mm-hmm. you can't get a job.
Well, yep.
Because, you know, if they say, well, you're only going to be here for a couple of years, and by the time we train you and blah, 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 blah. So, mm-hmm. There's a whole population who have, regardless of color,
mm-hmm.
who have knowledge, experience, blah, 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 that could add. And the more people you have working, the bigger your tax take is, the more taxes are paid into the system.
Mm-hmm.
So it would behoove us to make sure that you have a fully working population.
Now, what I've observed here, and we'll get back to Scotch, what I have observed firsthand is that the unions here lay a lot of blame, or should shoulder a great bit of the blame, because they were supposed to be for the little man, meaning everybody, every hue. But in this state, they partner up with a particular politician, and they want to get their goals in, and they don't really afford the unions. Some of the unions do not afford and openly solicit or invite or recruit people of color from outside of this, quote, melting pot. So anyway.
And also, I think that was really evident in this last election.
Mm-hmm.
Because and I think some of the unions had to eat a little crow, because they did not support nor defend one of the Democrats, the Democrat who ran,
mm-hmm.
who had carried the torch to Washington to bring us jobs, to bring us a lot of benefits that we didn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a volunteer, and it really irritated me, and because we're on air, I won't say what I want to say, that they did not support our now governor, Neil Abercrombie.
Well,
that really, and I was bold enough once to take one of them on and tell him, you should be ashamed of yourself. You are not standing up for the little person anymore. You're standing up for your own benefits, and you're also not standing up for the little guy within your organization.
And I think that goes back to our earlier conversation about the fact that they have forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
It was the unions in the early days that broke the back of the Big Five. It was the unions that broke the back of segregation and discrimination. And as they grew, they have forgotten their early roots. They have forgotten where they came from. They were the ones that created, that the Democrat and Republican parties were created legally in 1900. In the 50s, when the 442nd came back and said, this has got to stop, this discrimination, that I'm born here and I can't get a haircut. You know, these were the local Japanese. The discrimination was so bad. So as the rebirth of the Democratic Party in the 50s, it was the unions that came on board. It was all of these funny-looking, non-Big Five people. They have forgotten where they came from. They have forgotten what got them to this point.
Mm-hmm. I was a close friend of A.Q. McElrath and was privileged to work with A.Q. for 20 years on many issues. I represented the Hawaii Nurses Union at one point when they, year 2000, with four strikes going on. A.Q. was always there for us. And the reason I'm bringing her name up is AQ and I had this conversation about where the unions, what the unions have forgotten many times, and there was no one I knew more disappointed in how the unions are... Let's don't lump them all together. Some of the unions have devolved into power groups that benefit the folks at the top, and they've forgotten who the workers are and what they're there for in the first place. And I'll sort of leave it at that. Now, I want to segue from that back to where we were before the break, talking about Carol Cox's question about the Democratic Party and the relationship of the party to the elected officials. And I want to put a period maybe to that. There is a strong movement, a very vibrant movement. It's going to be very visible during this next session, because Democrats that I know, that I talk to every day, are sick and tired of the legislature ignoring the platform of the Democratic Party. What is the platform of the Democratic Party? The platform is the document that is assembled after thousands of hours of meetings, debating resolutions on everything from gun control to single-payer health care to death with dignity to the civil unions bill. Those all start out as resolutions in the Democratic Party. Those resolutions are transmitted to the legislature. The last line of every resolution says, be it therefore resolved, this will be transmitted to the state legislature and the congressional electeds, etc. However, in the past, those resolutions have just been sort of yawned at and ignored. That's not going to happen in quite that way this year if what I'm hearing takes place.
Well, it is exactly correct. At this last convention, I would say less than 50% of the current elected officials showed up. They wear the little D, but they don't participate in the party functions.
And they act surprised when they see all these requests coming over from the party.
They don't participate in the party. The party is a real organization, a nonprofit organization. It has a charter. It is a real functioning thing. It's not some imaginary thing out there. People come from all over the island to...
All over the state.
All over the state to craft these resolutions. They debate them, and I mean the debates get hot. Democrats love fighting.
Yeah. They go on until 2 o'clock in the morning.
Democrats love fighting. Anyway, they finally
discussing.
No, they love the fight. Anyway, they finally come to an agreement. This is what passed. Now, as Scott says, this has moved on to the legislature. How many of them don't read it? Don't sign on, don't care.
Don't vote.
Yes, and don't care. So, the Republicans love to talk about the machine and that they are controlled by the machine. They're not. It's too bad that they're not, but they're not. We need, as card-carrying Democrats, we need to be there, to sit there, to look them in the eye.
Marcia, it's called party discipline, and this has been the debate since I've been a Democrat in Hawaii for 25 years. Party discipline. The original covenant between the elected officials and the Democratic Party was the party we'll support you as a candidate, we'll give you money, we'll turn out people for sign waving, we'll help you in any way we can. Once you're elected, you will pass the resolutions as passed by the Democratic Party.
That doesn't exist right now, and we need to change it.
Yeah.
I think we are, and I think the elected officials that are ignoring this are going to find a new day
starting the 19th of January, which is when the session begins.
And isn't it? And this is the first year that I've known that we've even kept a list at party headquarters, and it's alphabetical, and it's open to any Democrat.
If you know about it.
If you know about it, and you can go in and ask to see if your representative or senator has signed the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for anyone also who's in city council and considers themselves a Democrat. They also were given the option of signing it.
Yeah.
And so I'm really proud that they're finally starting to really do something with it.
To exert party discipline.
Here's something that I'm quite concerned with, my observations, and that is we see, and I don't want this to be viewed as we're here supporting and the Democratic Party, because I'm so disillusioned with their behavior and the activities and the willingness to defraud the public. You take the Wabanaki Gulch landfill with this. It's happening under a Democratic, and the governor should have been up in the plane. This is one of the most offensive acts against the environment that I've witnessed personally, and it's still unfolding, and we don't know how to quantify it. The governor hadn't spoken out. The governor, Neil Abercrombie, should immediately open all the records that is available for inspections at that landfill immediately. And then, as well as the Mayor Carlisle, they should have been up in a plane yesterday, because it migrates its way up the coast, impacting people. Where are the people and the leaders? So what troubles me, though, is that we won't have any checks and balances. We have one Republican in the Senate. And how many we have in the House?
Eight.
And
that are declared Democrats.
Republicans.
But what's scary about that, we've had some of them want to abandon ship. So we probably, Carolyn Iwana, she, with the signing of a signature, you can come on into the party. Mike Gabbard, come on into the party. So this is what's troubling. We're willing to take those people that will openly, I don't mean to say that Karen Iwana has been openly opposed to gay rights and interfering in the life.
She has not voted for it.
Right. Okay, well, then chime in. But again,
I'm not sure that'll happen again, Carol.
Well, I hope not.
That has created an outrage within party loyalists. And just so you and your audience will know, I'm one of the most critical Democrats probably that's ever been in the Democratic Party of Hawaii. That maybe will...
You're their favorite child.
Well, first of all, I was the first openly gay member of the State Central Committee. I was the assistant secretary of the party. I've been in the room. I worked for the last governor. I've been in the room, so I've seen all this stuff from the inside, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned that if I'm not a card-carrying Democrat, I can't get in the room.
Right.
So that's my motivation. Yeah. I want to be at the table.
And speaking to that caller earlier, I'm observing the Abercrombie administration. Where are the African Americans that we know he's friends to Obama? Is that good enough, or is he going to make a concerted effort and tear down some of the walls and do these things?
I can't answer that, but I'm saying this, that his campaign, I saw more African Americans supporting him than I have seen in any campaign, and I've been a card-carrying Democrat since 1972. Now, also...
But how will that inform...
Let me finish this. I can... Faye Kennedy and Betty Jo Harris and me, three of us.
Okay.
Just three in the party for how many years? Now, all of a sudden, we do see more, but it's a very small. If you're not, this is the way the game is played. If you're going to be outside throwing stones, it doesn't work. Where are the
African Americans that are inside, working from the inside. Change comes from the inside.
So, in other
words, I'm inviting, and it's free.
Well, let me. So, in other words, in a democracy, unless you join the party as a black person, then you shouldn't be afforded.
No, I didn't say that.
I'm just, because listeners may be confused out there, and I'm one of those hearing this. If I don't become a member of the Democratic Party, a member of the Republican Party, I shouldn't be able to sit at the table and suck the soup.
Well,
is that it?
No, I'm saying.
Well, yes, it is. But theoretically, we're talking theoretically. I'm telling you practically. If you want to be at the table, you have to join the party.
Join the club.
Join the club. Well, call it what you want.
Now, if you remember, you know Fannie Lou Hamer, just like I did.
Yeah.
Okay. The Democratic Party did not invite blacks in. They didn't say, hey, y'all come.
Mm-hmm.
If you'll remember, it was the Democratic Party that put up the most fight against the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Mm-hmm.
It was. Now, in 1964, when the African Americans, the Fannie Lou Hamer's group, the Mississippi Freedom Democrats, they broke down the doors of the Democratic Party in Atlantic City at the convention. When they came, all of the delegations, all of them, were mainly white men.
Mm-hmm.
When she insisted, they came, their delegation had men and women and whatnot. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they break down the doors, and the President of the United States says, offer her two seats. And she said, no.
Right.
We will not accept two seats. We all came this far. We're all tired. Well, what's from that point on, the Democratic rules changed and said you have to, the party has to be balanced. You have to have all of these minorities. So they broke the door down. The Democrats didn't invite us in.
Well, it's not a matter of inviting. They have a responsibility to govern all people.
Right.
So I'm saying that
once that happened, the next year, 1965, you had the Voting Rights Act.
Okay.
Blacks elected mayors, city council, school boards. That's where the power is.
Right.
And unless you get in and push for that power, where is it?
Does one have to work and pull maintenance on freedom and the right to be democratic?
No.
Well, my quote is this. If you're not playing the great game of politics, then you're being used as a pawn by someone who is.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a neighborhood board, whether it's your city council, whether it's your PTA, you gotta show up.
So, in other words, if you don't show up, then the unethical politician can do
just whatever they're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay. And also, one of the things that Marcia said about testifying, not all of us have, have the ability to take off of work to testify, but they can send their testimony in either by snail mail or by fax or by email.
Mm-hmm.
or by phone recording.
Call them up and tell them what you want.
So what if Dr. Martin Luther King said, looked over his shoulder and asked his assistants, we're going to fight for people of color and people for justice of all people. How many of those do we have? Do we have any letters in there that they're begging me to help?
They're begging
me. Or wanting his support or writing testimony? I'm going to give a speech in Washington. How many, he looks over his shoulder and goes, how many letters do I have in support of me?
Well,
one of his biggest speeches, and you can, and everybody can Google this one, was give us the ballot. I was part of the civil rights movement for years, and our biggest thing, the unsexy part of it, was getting people registered to vote. Because like Scott said, if you don't, the other person controls you. In Mississippi, or in the Congress, power is given by how long you've been on in the legislature and by party. That's where the power is.
Let me ask you something real quick. Does government workers get off to go vote? Do they get any time off?
Yes.
Right? Now, so follow this.
Everybody.
Follow this, but some private companies don't, right?
No, they have to legally give you time off.
Well, I'm just...
But you can lose your job, so...
Okay, so when you have that, why isn't there an effort to fight that and the Democratic Party and everybody has come out and said, we will prosecute you if you fail to allow to private industry and any other party?
Well, I'll mention it.
Yeah.
I'll mention it. The Democratic Party is, I don't think people outside of the party, people understand what it is. The party, first of all, never has any money. The only time we have any money is during elections, and then
no one pays dues.
Yeah, no one pays dues, and it's not a organization in the conventional sense. It's mostly volunteer, and that's where you get into, well, who's got time to volunteer when you're working 2.5 jobs? Who does show up? Let me tell you, I'm 70 years old. I was down there at a meeting the other night thinking, why am I here? And then I had to remind myself, I'm here because I had something I wanted to accomplish, and I accomplished it, and I went home and went to bed. But it's tough. It's tough making a living in Hawaii. It's tough making a living anywhere and participating in the democratic process. Unfortunately, that's all we've got. That's the only avenue.
I had to apologize to Marcia when we came in this morning because I didn't go to the bell ringing on Thursday. But I had been at meetings on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night. And Thursday, my mind was blotto, and I absolutely forgot it. And it's one of the things I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always very touching, and it also brings us back to the words of Martin Luther King, mm-hmm. which are so important, because I keep thinking, and I'm not alluding to anything historical back in the 1500s, but Martin Luther King was a man of all seasons and all times, because when we were listening to his words today, that's what I heard. He could be saying those words down any place today in any county in Hawaii, and they would ring true. The poor, the homeless, the ones who need jobs or are underemployed, you know, his words are almost universal.
I want to get something in here that I've Carol pointed out. I've got some notes over here, and I want to make a little connection and maybe bring us back to the subject. I'm from Oklahoma. People often ask me, well, what's this gay 70-year-old Howley from Oklahoma doing up until last year, I was the vice president of the Martin Luther King Hawaii Coalition. And people are right to inquire, well, what's this 70-year-old gay Howley doing with Martin Luther King? I had a very unique mother. Back in the 1950s, she took me as a 13, 14, 15-year-old kid to various meetings of the black community in Oklahoma City. There I met, at 14 years old, a lady, and I want to mention her name because she's now 90 years old. She's still going strong in Oklahoma. She's known, and I'm going to read this paragraph. Many know Clara Luper as the mother of the civil rights movement. The mother of the civil rights movement. She began the Oklahoma sit-in movement August the 19th, 1958, when she led a group of students in a sit-in at an Oklahoma City lunch counter. That was Walgreens drugstore. Mother took me down there that day, and I see the pictures from that day, and I remember being a 15-year-old kid with my mother, feeling quite normal because we always sat on the back of the bus.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't understand that till how brave that was of my mother till later. Now, that was 1958. 10 years later, Martin Luther King was assassinated. A lot happened between 1958 and 1968. Now, as a gay person, the Stonewall riots, which began really the gays the first time in history gays in America stood up together and said, we're not going to take this abuse anymore. So between 1968, the Stonewall riots in 1969, then look what happened in this country. Vietnam, the revolution, the women and gays and blacks and people of all colors coming together to try to change society. And I believe in many ways we did change society. What happened since, I don't know. But we've got to recapture that feeling of those days or we are lost.
Well, you know, one way I think that for myself, anyway, in the 1960s, I was still, number one, I was a Martinez in Southern California when they didn't have the cute little names of Hispanic, and it was a lot of other names that I will not repeat. Those who have lived through those times know them, and I'm not going to repeat them. But tonight, this afternoon, I will board a plane for Maui, and this Native American, Hispanic, Caucasian has been asked to speak and to walk in the Maui. It's supported and run by the African American Historic Foundation of Maui, has asked me to be their keynote speaker this afternoon. Never in my wildest dreams did I think this little Martinez from Emerald Avenue in El Cajon, California, would ever be asked and put on a plane to go and say something, and they think I have something of interest and value to say. Mm-hmm.
And you do.
And you do. And that is tremendous, because back in 1996, when we first, P-Flag, first marched in the parade, I wasn't sure we should be there. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. And I lived through the time of Martin Luther King, but I was so trying to fit in that I didn't know about the world around me, what was going on with Martin Luther King. I am sorry. I wasn't down there on the street corners.
Well, this is, you know,
just a...
It's the same as it happened in the past. I just met a gentleman, Luis Zapata, a Latino from California, who went to Mississippi. In fact, in my neighborhood, in my exact neighborhood in the 1960s, and participated in SNCC. And he and I were reflecting back just recently. I'm going to have an interview with him talking about those things and the climate and all. And so it's a myth that black people accomplished this alone. It's a myth that we fought out of slavery on our own, because there were abolitionists. There were non-abolitionists who voted the right thing. So I think that's why I will always fly Martin Luther King's banner, because he represented what the world should be, not with the struggles, but we're going to always, something's going to fall out of the bag, and we must reach back and pick them up.
Well, now, speaking of SNCC, I was obviously a member of SNCC, because while it's the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee is what SNCC stands for. Now, we did have people from Hawaii. Dickie Wong, for those of you old enough to remember Dickie Wong. Dickie Wong went to Mississippi to do voter registration. A very dear friend of mine, Carl Emiola Young, full Chinese, fifth generation Chinese in Hawaii. He was there. There were several, a huge group from the UH that went to the summer of 64. So, you know, they came from all, mm-hmm. all walks, mm-hmm. to be a part of this. And I've even had people, Pocah for one, who was on before you, years and years ago, we talked about this for the last 25, 30 years, and he said it was watching the civil rights movement of the 60s on television that they realized that they could have their sovereignty back, that they understood what they had to do, just being that far, but watching it come together. So, you know, in the 70s, we had this rebirth of the Hawaiian movement.
Mm-hmm.
And so
No, it wasn't alone. I do really would like for you to talk to somebody from SNCC other than me that went through the horrors of the South.
Mm-hmm.
My friend Carl Young that I was telling you about, he passed a couple of years ago. He's Chinese, and his role in the summer of 64, and which again was just horrible, was that he was the money changer.
Mm-hmm.
Again, because he's Chinese and the stereotypes, the white people, the banks and the stores and whatnot, thought he was all Chinese laundry, Chinese food mm-hmm. restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So they would cash the checks for him. Now, we had, for the summer of 64, we had all these white kids from the North come down to this, for this event, to register people to vote. That was the whole idea.
Right.
Their parents would send them regular checks. Well, the stores wouldn't cash them, so the only way they could get the cash was through Carl. He would go to the bank and cash the
mm-hmm.
checks, and he kept the money moving through the summer of 64. So we do have people. There are no small jobs. Everybody had a part to play in this.
Mm-hmm. Looking back at one of the points we were talking about representation and African Americans or whomever participating in the voting in the Democratic Party, I remember personally, firsthand, my family or my grandfather, we would be in the fields chopping cotton, and we would get a visit from several farmers, the white farmers. And we would ask, what was the conversation? And he would tell us, they came to tell me that I was not to go down and vote. And I was not to go and register to vote. So this is why I say that, because you don't see African Americans or other people like Marshall Lee's enough, it is the responsibility of those that are in power in the party or in the club or whatever to simply be cognizant of that and be vigilant and do their self-policing and to ensure when they have an obligation to ask, why aren't they here? There may be factors and elements and things that are in place that are prohibiting them from being there. So do something to accommodate them. If it's they can't get out, extend the voting the time. Make sure some accommodate them. Put it on a day that they can go. Go to the churches and put it there. Put voting booths at the
Carol,
churches, whatever.
I want to interject some here. Yeah.
No churches. No churches.
Whatever.
No, you can't do that.
As Democrats, we do all that we can do. And all of us here today on your panel, because we're Democrats, we picked up whatever piece we could carry and carried
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
There are many other people that have, but everybody's got to pick up at least one little piece.
Exactly.
And that's the point of the party. That was the original point of the party.
Mm-hmm. Now,
our voting record is absolutely a disgrace that we have such a low voter turnout in this state.
You mean the Democratic?
Period.
Across the
board.
And
here, you can vote for 2 weeks prior to the date. There's no excuse.
Mm-hmm.
It's open all day on Saturday, and even this year it was open on a holiday. It is open. You can come. There's all over the state. You can
mm-hmm.
go vote.
Mm-hmm.
There's no excuse.
That's another whole show, Marshall.
Yeah, it is.
About why people don't vote.
Why people don't vote. Well, people think they don't have anything to vote for.
Well, I don't want to generalize, but again, it comes back to what we've been speaking about. Unless we, as a party, whatever party you're in, give them something to believe in and don't disenfranchise them along the way by giving yourself 36%. Raises when times are tough, when your own party, who's supposed to be free thinkers and liberated, and go out and fight against the gay and lesbian HB 444. I'm sorry, it's not just about poor colored people or people of color don't make it to the polls and vote. It's about ethics. It's about a party that's gone wild.
But
the girls gone wild. Politicians.
But let's rewind this. Now, when Jesse Jackson was running for president, Richard Port, a white, well-to-do man, went out and he got more African Americans registered to vote than anybody has ever seen before or since. This is when Jesse Jackson was running. He worked, I'm telling you, the man really worked. There's no question about that. Okay. What happened is, okay, Jesse Jackson did not win the presidency, but what he did win, and the media doesn't see it, but those of us inside, we got a black chair for the party. We got Hispanic women as in all kinds of great places. We got places in the party that we had never had before. And it has that made all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. I just wish Mr. Port had continued on that line and not stood in the way of...
Things changed.
Yes, because he did stand very directly in the way of HB 444 and
death
marriage
with
rights and dignity.
Death with dignity
death
stood in the way of.
And also abortion, end of termination of pregnancy. So some people come for a time, and the time is over, and others have to pick up the slack. And so we're asking your listeners to start picking up their slack.
Well, I'm excited about this next 4 years.
Yes.
Here's why. It's do or die, or it's the telltale. What are the Democrats really made of? We've now seen what's happening. We see the quote, the Tea Party finding their way into the Republican Party. Why not? What is going to happen with the Democratic Party? You have a majority of the Senate, and you have a majority. In fact, you have a majority of the House, and you got a governor that's a Democrat, and you got a lieutenant governor that's a Democrat. There shouldn't be any more excuses. We should be arriving.
Well, we have to support them.
Well, no. I don't put the onus on the public. We've already supported them. We voted them in.
No. Stop right there. It's not enough. I'm sorry. It's not enough to say, I voted for you, now do your job. That's not enough.
What do they do then?
No.
What does the voters do?
It's the party of the, it's the government of the people, for the people, by
the rhetoric. What are you expecting
the public? We're asking the public to show up. The legislature, the city council, the neighborhood board. We're asking the public to be part of it. The school boards, look at the condition of the schools. We're asking the public to show up.
But there's
90% of success is showing up.
Well, the representatives are in place. They will be the ones who are authoring the bills. They will be the ones who are introducing. They will be the, wait, don't nod your head. This is, I come from a background that says, let's call it what it is. Here you are. When the public can come in and beg on their knees to introduce a bill, you know that it is up to the chairman of that committee to schedule it.
That's right.
So what are you saying, that the public come in with a stick and stand at the door saying, if you don't table this issue or schedule for hearing, is that what you want us to do?
Well, yes. That would be, well, yes, but that would be the party leadership and those of us who go to the meetings and do show up to remind them, and which maybe is the great intro for my last statement.
Yeah, and we're coming down to the last minute, so.
And this is Martin Luther King. In the end, we will remember not the words of our enemies, but the silence of our friends.
Mm-hmm.
I might add to that the silence of the voters. They can pick up the phone. They can participate in any number of community organizations that all leads to the fertilization and empowerment of democracy.
And Martin Luther King also said, the time is always right to do the right thing.
Marcia, you got a last quote real quick. We're coming on the last minute here.
No, I don't have a quote, but it is a participatory democracy. And without that participation, the people in power stay in power.
Yeah. Well, I would conclude that this has been one of the most mixed messages. We've already voted them in. They're in place, and now we turn and say, well, you better have your butts up here to serve
right.
the coffee, stir the coffee, put the sugar in.
That's
if
right.
you don't do that, people,
they run away with the farm. Yeah.
Well, no, it's for you to come back on this show and tell us who is not holding their end of the bargain.
We'll be here.
See, it's that's the checks and balances. But anyway, thank the two of you, the three of you. I'm sorry, my goodness. I've lost my count. But anyway, thank you, and this is the Carol Cox Show. And
Thank you so much.
I appreciate you all joining me. We're going to be closing out here, and see you next week.
And tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show on K108.